This is the Freedom Fiends, the show that Angela Keaton from antiwar.com says is like taking bong hits of Trainwreck with sprinkles of Valium. This is Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, and I'm talking to Lusander Fiend, the Chop Shop Rooster, calling from the failed state project of Detroit. How are you, sir?
It's a frozen state project today. Well, yeah. Actually, for the past week or so. Hey, I had something really interesting happen in the past couple of days. I was talking to some people about government and things like that.
Ew.
And I was talking the way that I normally talk, and I didn't use, like, our government or my president or anything like that. I use, like, you know, the distancing pronouns and everything. No possessive tense, you know. And I'm like, well, the U.S. government does this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, I'm going to talk about economics and these other things. And this one gal says to me, she says, wow, where are you from? You have like no foreign accent.
From Anacapistan. Yeah. There's a Libertarians Against Humanity card about that. It's carefully wording everything you say to avoid saying we to not sound collectivist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've darn near dropped we out of my vocabulary unless I'm mentioning myself and about six other people.
Yeah. I often say to people, you know, when they say, well, what we got to do about ISIS? And I'm like, who? You and them? You got a mouse in your pocket? You know, if I'm the only person in the room with them. And I occasionally slip and then correct myself. And explain why you and I and the fiends and other various libertarians and voluntarists and Anacapistans try to avoid saying we, like, well, we had to drop the bomb to end World War II. We saved thousands of lives. That's not true, first of all. But second of all, I wasn't born, so there's no we in it. And thirdly, you know, talking about foreign policy currently or anything that any government does, why don't we say we, Lou?
Well, it's one of those words, and as you already mentioned, it is very collectivist, but it allows people to take credit or blame for things that they had no part in, is probably my biggest objection.
Yeah.
And it also includes people involuntarily into different things. For example, when somebody says, we have an obligation to feed the hungry, you know, no. I believe that I have an obligation to feed the hungry and help the poor in other ways, but nobody else can make that determination but me.
Yeah. In a lot of places, even government officials who say that are the same people that are banning people from feeding the hungry. What happened in France recently?
Oh, God.
And it's not just France. You know, if you think this is absurd, you got to think, like, this happens in America all the time, too. But, you know, it's Don't be like the French, and I'm not collectivizing the French, but this is horrible.
Yeah. Three dumpster divers were convicted of stale food theft in France.
Wow.
A court in France has found three people who helped themselves to expired foodstuffs discarded by a supermarket guilty of theft.
Man. I used to know a lot of dumpster divers in San Francisco, which that sentence out of context probably makes a lot of sense to a lot of conservatives. Of course you did. But I actually knew a guy that found a diamond ring in a dumpster once. You never know what you find in a dumpster.
I have a buddy of mine that dumpster dives at Sam's Club, and they find, you know, just the best stuff that you can get. I mean, you know, like a full patio set, but like the bottom of a table is scratched or something like that. He said, don't ever buy shelving unit. Always go dumpster diving at Sam's Club.
Do you think there are any other syndicated talk shows in America where the hosts are talking about the joys of dumpster diving?
Hey, news you can use.
Maybe somebody on Free Talk Live, but I've never heard it. I've never heard Rush Limbaugh talk about it. You know, I heard something interesting on Free Talk Live today. Mark said that Rush Limbaugh single-handedly, with one rant, basically killed advertising in talk radio, like made it really hard to sell ads for everybody forever. When he called some woman a whore because she wanted free birth control, you know, my thing was, no, you're a leech. I don't care what you want. I don't care what you want the money for. Yeah. Birth control's fine. But, yeah, he like literally like nobody wants to advertise on radio now because of that. It's really hard to sell ads on radio because of that one thing. That's scary, man.
Wow. And that's also collectivist too.
It is. It's collectivist. Yeah. A lot of people's like fear of, you know, I guess boycotts are a good thing technically, you know, and boycotts too, because it's not using government guns to get your way. It's using the market. But it's kind of funny that the people who generally yell the loudest for boycotts and say, you know, if you ever advertise on that station, show, network, or medium again, me and my 10,000 followers will never buy any of your products. A lot of the same people that say that are the same people that want to use government guns to get their way too, you know, with
laws. Oh yeah. And those are the true parasites there. But yeah, it's really crazy that somebody would, you know, just judge an entire medium upon the words of one radio show host. You know, so it's basically they're collectivizing, you know, they're punishing we for one person's words.
Rush ruined it for the whole class. He's got enough money to retire for 10 lifetimes, so he just ruined it for everybody.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like in boot camp. You've seen Full Metal Jacket, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, one person screws up and the whole company has to do push-ups, or the whole platoon, something like that. It's really irritating. And they showed the blanket party where Private Pyle got beat up. These days, if you have a blanket party in boot camp, then they bust on the entire company. It's because, yeah, what was it? Second platoon, when I was going through boot camp, they had a blanket party for one of their screw-ups, and at like 3 in the morning, and then about 3:30 in the morning, they were out in the front courtyard getting smoked doing push-ups until probably about 5 a.m. when everybody else got up.
Yeah. That's basically horizontal enforcement. You know, they punish everybody and then figure that everybody will met out punishment to the one person. It's very Lord of the Flies. They actually had blanket parties at the boarding school I went to, and it was one of my earliest realizations that the world is a horrible place and people are horrible. And I was never the recipient of one, but one of my friends was. And if you don't know what a blanket party is, it's where you throw a blanket over someone in their sleep and then like start pounding on them with anything handy, you know, wooden spoons, whatever.
A sack with a bar of soap in it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't know, man. People are, something wrong with people, I think. Yeah, the older I get, the less I trust humanity in general. I still have a very favorable opinion of people that I like, I guess I'd say, but, you know, in general, also in Liberty, I've really, I guess I've resigned from the Liberty movement, and I don't know if I was ever really a part of it, but it's kind of experiencing growing pains, which is a good thing, of where it's not this tiny little thing where everybody's like, oh, we got to stick together or we hang separately. You know, we're like, it's getting big enough that it's attracting loons, I would say. And I'm not talking about any of the celebritarians. I've done my piece on them this week, but I'm talking about like individuals that I don't even know, like commentary I'm seeing on the social networks that just sound like grade school. Or worse, they sound like, you know, boarding school. They sound like the army. They sound like, well, I think we should just kill the guy. You know, just, man, what do you think?
I agree with you. Yeah. And it really goes, libertarians, we bill ourselves as these rational, calm thinking people.
Who's this we? That's my whole point.
Libertarians.
Yeah.
Libertarians.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We bill ourselves as these rational, calm thinking people. And I'm sorry, but libertarians are just as prone to groupthink, mob mentality, and everything else. I mean, there's a few that hang back from it, but. You know, I've seen recent events where people were just flying off the handle over things without even assessing the situation.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So tell me about people outlawing sledding real quick.
Okay. Yeah, we talked about this a couple weeks ago out in Dubuque, Iowa. They decided that they were going to outlaw sledding. And where is it here? Oh, yes. In the wonderful freedom state of New Jersey. This is Montville. The ban on sledding actually started in Montville in 2007, but now town officials are thinking of making it a full-on crime to go sledding.
Crime.
It was just a sort of crime before, but now it's full-on.
Yeah.
So a joyful winter event that kids love doing is now going to be a crime. Are they kidding? Well, unfortunately, they aren't. And there's a little poll on here, and 2.32% say yes, and 97.68% say, shut up, you stupid status. No.
Yeah, you know, this sounds like a really horrible thing, but I almost think it's a good thing because I loved sledding as a kid, and I probably would have done it even if it was illegal. But if sledding had been banned when I was a kid, I would have stopped being a status like 30 years earlier, man. I just would have been like, the government is horrible. How could anyone believe in that, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's these increase in the encroachments of the filthy parasitic state that brings more people to liberty. As it becomes more unbearable, people start looking for alternatives and they say, hey, you know what? This whole, you know, having a master thing just isn't, you know, quite so good. And yeah, they start embracing liberty.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, some would say, well, but at some tipping point, you get so close to North Korea that there's no way, even if you hate the state, to like express it or try to live outside of its rules in any way. But I think America's different because it's had some amount of freedom for so long. I also think that the fact that so many people are armed here makes a difference. And I don't mean because there could be an American Revolution too. I think it's that the idea that owning a gun and considering the possibility of self-defense is like the one place where you think, I know the government won't be here in time to help me. And it kind of gives you a mindset of, you know, that the government is not your ultimate mommy and daddy, and you may have to take care of yourself at some point.
Yeah. And plus, I don't think there's too many people in North Korea that have been alive and actually experienced freedom for them to know what it actually is.
Yeah.
They were all killed.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash, if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow. Woof, woof.
Meow. So, what's up, brother man?
Just living the dream, loving the snow and the cold and everything else. And I'm glad that sledding has been banned here in the failed state project yet.
Do you feel safe?
They just,
that it has not been banned?
Yeah, no. I mean, there's everything else is being banned, so whatever. But fortunately, though, nobody here has been arrested for trying to shovel snow.
Yeah.
Because once again, from the great freedom state of New Jersey in Bound Brook, a couple of kids were going out there and trying to make a little bit of money and help out their neighbors. And they're going door to door offering to shovel snow. And there's a borough ordinance that prevents them from being allowed to do this.
You know, I think there's probably less freedom in places called boroughs than places that aren't. What is that? Like New York City, stuff in Pennsylvania, stuff in New Jersey. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Travis put it best when he says, yeah, ordinance is a military term. It means destruction. Yeah. It means explosive stuff. So, yeah, there was a couple of kids that got busted for going door to door. And supposedly a neighbor called and snitched and said there were there was suspicious activity in the neighborhood. People were walking around with shovels over their shoulders, and they had like a, I don't know, maybe a snowblower or something like that. Now, heaven forbid you see people with shovels and snowblowers when there's like a big giant snowstorm that just came through.
I like that I've grown up and I now have a snowblower. I could actually go buy one and do it with that. I remember when I was a kid, I was never really into, I was, you know, always had little jobs and stuff, but I was never into shoveling walks for money because it seemed like a lot of work for the amount you got for it. And I remember one time I got into it when I was like, oh, 13 or something. I got into my aunt's diet pills and took about three time release Benzedrine. And it was early in the morning. And I went out and shoveled a bunch of walks. I shoveled like 10 walks and I was charging, I don't know, $2 each. And I was like, I was rich. And I was like, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I'm going to take these pills and shovel walks. And I probably would have had a heart attack by 14 if I had. But yeah. I don't have to do that anymore.
Oh, when I was a kid, I would shovel walks and rake leaves and make money. And I did a little bit of grass cutting, but I didn't like the grass cutting quite as much.
I don't have to do that anymore. I don't have to shovel walks or take Benzedrine. But yeah, there's weird people like in the world. Our street is not a through street, and there's very little foot traffic on it except like the mailman, and he goes through the yards. He doesn't go on the on the walkways. And the guy that lives next door to me, like, perfect neighbor otherwise, but one time saw me out there and he's like, you know, I really wish you'd shovel the walk in front of your house. And I was like, I don't think I've ever seen him walk on our walk. I think it was just like old man problems. Like, it was bugging him that I didn't always shovel my walk promptly. So I did it for a while because I kind of felt bad because his wife had just died. And, you know, it's not really my business, but I felt like, okay, it's, you know, it's an excuse to go shovel my walk. I'll do it anyway. I probably should. And I don't want the guy to obsess on me, and it's not that hard to do and I'll do it. And I just kind of stopped doing it after a while, doing it promptly. I do it when it's, what I do is I see what the weather's going to be the next day. And if it's going to melt, I don't do it. And, I used to be like the first guy on our block to mow and snow blow. And now I'm one of the last because I kind of don't really care about the collective public property of the walk that's not mine in front of my house that I'm expected to maintain.
I used to use that method too, except I stretch it out a little bit further. I says, this will probably melt in a couple months. Why bother?
Yeah.
And people say, why don't you shovel the walk? I'm like, can't you take the hint?
Yeah. People who live places like Detroit and New Hampshire are like, how can you live in Wyoming? I heard it's like the coldest, windiest, worst, snowiest place in the country. And it's like the town I live in, Casper, is the least cold or horrible. You know, it's pretty cold and pretty windy, but there's a city here for a reason. It's because it was like nice weather and kind of shielded by a mountain. And I don't
have no snow right now.
We have snow right now. We have snow. Yesterday we had no snow. Yesterday I sent you a picture of me like in a t-shirt in my backyard. It looked like spring. It was like 48 degrees or something. It was a lot worse where I grew up in upstate New York. Like, it would snow in the fall and not thaw until, you know, April or May. But here it thaws like four times through the winter. There's never constant snow. And then we'll have like these spring-like days like yesterday in the middle of the winter. I like it. But we do have 29 below zero sometimes and 50 mile an hour winds often.
In August.
Yeah, it's warm inside.
Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Freedom Fiends. Like doing bong hits of Trainwreck with a sprinkle of Valium. That sounds exciting and mellow at the same time. What do you think, Lou?
Freedom Fiends is a hell of a drug.
Yeah. We are talking, Lou and I, talking over Fiend Phone, which is a free piece of software that I developed with Derek Slopey. And you can go to fiendphone.com and download it and try it out and improve your own Liberty Media for absolutely no money. You can also make a donation to our Indiegogo or PayPal or Bitcoin or We're not taking Namecoin anymore. It's not worth our money.
Are we taking Doge?
Well, Derek
or
and I,
we upgrade, Derek or and we I, upgrade to the peso.
Derek, pesos are worth more. Derek and I, or the yen. Derek and I crashed Namecoin when we started working on the Meowbit project. It was $7 for a Namecoin, and when we were done with it, it was 80 cents. Because basically, Namecoin and the dot bit idea was, it'd been around for 3 years, but nobody had really developed a way to view dot bit domains. And then this guy Jeremy came up with Free Speech Me, which I named and helped promote. And then Derek improved on the idea and wrote his own code to make something that was even better called Meowbit. And all of a sudden, there was interest in Namecoin. There wasn't enough interest to actually like get people to adopt it. And there's a lot of problems with Namecoin. You know, it wasn't really about our end of it. We did our work. It was the problem of the wallet for Namecoin is really crappy, and also the low price of registering a domain made it so there were like 100,000 squatted domains and like 5 working dot bit websites. But there's other ways that problem could be solved, and I've actually done a blog post on that on the Fiends blog if you want to check it out. I think it's still the top post. But we got people interested in it again, and there's this thing called mixed mining, which is where when you're mining Bitcoin, Namecoin is designed so it's really easy to mine Bitcoin and Namecoin at the same time. And on your miner, you can adjust, like, you know, make 90% name Bitcoin and 10% Namecoin or whatever. And there was a time when people were mining like 50-50 Bitcoin and Namecoin at the same time. And then they kind of stopped doing that, and people weren't mining it very much. And then what we did was we got enough interest in Namecoin that everybody started mining it again, but nobody really started using it, and it crashed the market. And literally, Derek and I, if you invested in Namecoin, you can blame us for your loss, but you really can't, because, you know, investments are always come with risk. And we were trying to make the whole system more valuable, but it was kind of flawed to begin with. So we only took it halfway. We only took it to the bottom, and it couldn't come back up.
So basically, Namecoin, you guys like advanced it, but it didn't advance itself, and it fell behind, and people printed too much Namecoin.
Yeah,
and
the Weimar Namecoin Republic. We didn't ruin Namecoin. We put it on sale permanently. You can buy it a lot cheaper now, man.
Yeah, with the price of Bitcoin right now, though, I don't think too many people are mining it like they were. I think the mining has dropped back quite a bit because of
it's really expensive.
The level of difficulty that's going on with it. And did you see Cody Wilson just did an interview with Derek Bros, and he's has a bit of a negative outlook on Bitcoin?
I know he has a negative outlook on the Bitcoin Foundation, or whoever's like the central planners in charge of the decentralized, Satoshi Nakamoto, I believe, like put 3 or 4 people in charge. Like they have the ability to. It's kind of weird because it is decentralized in a way. Like if somebody came up with a new function in Bitcoin, it wouldn't be a matter of everyone votes on it, whether to put it in or not. It would be voted on by whether the people mining it and using it, but especially mining it, like integrate that into it. That's what would change it. But There's one thing that like this foundation has that nobody else has, is they have a key, you know, an electronic key where they can send a message to everybody on Bitcoin, like an emergency message. It's never been used, but there's some guys who kind of have some like government, governance, some oversight on it. And I know that Cody Wilson's really against that idea, and he has like vowed to destroy that organization or something, which I think is kind of silly. I generally co-sign most of what Cody Wilson does, but that kind of just seemed like posturing to me. Is that what you're talking about?
No, not really. The gist of what I got from the interview, and they were bouncing around on a lot of different subjects, but it sounds like the people that are trying to make Bitcoin go mainstream, and also the folks that want, you know, regulatory approval and everything else. The gist that I got from it was that they're too busy trying to go mainstream and not putting enough effort into innovation.
Yeah, well, there are people, rich people or people who got in early, but mainly people that got in as an investment. They're not really people who have a love of the concept of Bitcoin, like the Winklevi, as they're called, the Winklevoss brothers, who, you know, really didn't have much to do with founding Facebook, but basically were like, there should be something called the Facebook. And then some other guy actually did it all. And, you know, it was even a different idea than what they were originally trying to get him to do. And they ended up suing him for an inordinate amount of money. It was, you know, in the triple digit millions, I think.
I saw the movie.
And they bought a bunch of Bitcoin when it was, I don't know, $10 each or something. They literally own like 2% of all the Bitcoin in the world, those two guys. But those two preppy guys. But people like those guys, really, they're like, oh, government, come in. We'll lie on our backs and you can regulate us. They're really into the idea. They really want regulation because they stand to profit from it. Like, basically, you know, they have the money and enough Bitcoin to start the, you know, the only official Bitcoin, buy milk over the internet with Bitcoin. Like, you know, they have their position to be the only ones or the top cartel only ones in any kind of Bitcoin industry if it's regulated to the point where it becomes really hard for other people. So I would imagine
Cody, it becomes captured.
Yeah, Cody's really against anything being able to be captured. So what is his solution? Is he going to come up with a new cryptocurrency?
No, he didn't really go into solutions a whole lot. But with these people, there's a lot of libertarians that got involved with it, and they saw Bitcoin as a solution to a problem. The problem being the U.S. dollar and
all
the fiat currency around the world, all the central banks and everything else. And a lot of non-libertarians got involved because, you know, they also see the problem. But it's the non-libertarians or the status libertarian types that want to get this approval and acceptance and the pat on the head from Uncle Government. And they said, hey, let's create this thing that, you know, that works good and it doesn't have the same flaws as the U.S. dollar and the U.S. banking system. And let's bring the government in to regulate it and make it like the U.S. dollar and the U.S. banking system.
Yeah. Supposedly, one of the things that Bitcoin did is made a bunch of, you know, penniless libertarians secretly into millionaires. Supposedly, there are a bunch of people out there that got in when it was cheap, got a whole bunch of it or mined it and sat on it, and they're now rich. So, you know, it's said to have increased the power of libertarianism. But I don't know any of those people. Well, actually, there's one of them, but he donated $20 to Bitcoin or to Fiendphone, which is pretty cool. But I'd like to say, if there are any of those people listening, Fiendphone could really use some funding, and I'm not going to put it in my pocket. Like, literally, I need money to pay the programmer. We'll get back to Bitcoin, but here's the list of improvements we need to get some more money to put in Fiendphone. Change the run server button to a tick box, cough button, audio alerts on incoming call, add call clock, toggleable gentle EQ boost, three-way switch that would allow it to run in one direction or the other direction or both directions, so it could be used for a signal to tower link. Fix glitch when using authentication, needing to enter password twice. And those are kind of minor things, but then here's some major things. Adding recording, which would make it a totally killer app. Like, it's all you would need to podcast. And actually, like, that was way down on our list, but we've actually moved it up because here's the thing. We've helped a bunch of people set it up. Like, people we don't even know, just podcasters who are interested, and we help them set it up because they'll use it to podcast and they'll talk about it. But all of them, like, they're like, where's the record button? Like, they just assume it'll have recording in it because a lot of other VoIP programs do, a lot of lesser VoIP programs. So we want to add recording into it. Automatic port forwarding, which will be very tricky to add in, but that'll make it so anybody can use it and they don't have to configure anything in their router. Adding encryption, which will basically make it the most useful application in the world. Adding IPv6 support, so it'll work with people like Lou who have an IPv6 IP address only. So it'll be future-proof, basically. And then lowering the overall latency in the program. It's pretty good, but we'd like to lower it a little bit more. So, yeah, man, if there's anybody out there who just happened to get into Bitcoin early on and you got a bunch of money, drop us some Bitcoin, man. And we will, you know, it's not like most people's libertarian welfare queen things of like, I need money to pay my rent so I can yell on the internet about how bad the government is. No, my rent's paid. My mortgage is paid. I have that taken care of because I have a day job. What we're looking for is money to help pay this programmer to improve this already amazing program that Lou and I are talking over, to make it so anybody can yell about the government with people in remote locations in ultra high quality and vastly improve the quality of talk media. Because really, nobody's going to take alternative ideas seriously outside of, you know, libertarianism. People, the outside world is going to dismiss it if you sound like you do when you're using Google Hangouts or Skype.
Oh God, the Google Hangouts, the crunchy sound,
neckbeard.
Yeah.
You can see everyone in their sad little apartments looking feisty.
Yeah, and FiendPhone is very good. I mean, the fact that we can have 2- and 3-way conversations without the dropouts, without the crunching, we can talk over each other without the crunch. I mean, it's a darn fine program.
Yeah. And Lou sounds really good, but literally Lou sounds the worst of any of our 12 co-hosts, except maybe Ben, because Ben's over satellite internet. But like anybody with a good home cable or DSL can sound great. And you can talk over each other. Go ahead and talk at the same time as me, Lou. So we're talking at the same time.
And we are talking, it's not my fault.
And it's like, if this was on Skype, it'd be cutting him out. And the music came up, so we'll talk over each other more when we get back from this trip to the market. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's FiendPhone.com. FiendPhone.com. Foxtrot, echo, November, phone.com.
FiendPhone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
I'm drinking colloidal car wreck Valium, hippie Valium. No. You know what hippie Valium is?
No, I don't.
It's what I call that over-the-counter sleep aid that's like valerian root and, you know, tryptophan or something. It works if you ever have to like sleep and can't. Although it only makes you sleep for about 4 hours. But yeah, I call it hippie Valium. It's mellow, man.
Okay, yeah, I'm drinking something sort of like hippie Valium.
What is it?
After the show, I'm going to go to sleep because I have to get up in the morning. But yeah, I'm drinking coffee.
You have to get up because you're not a libertarian welfare queen. You actually have a job.
No.
Yeah. So you want to talk more about Bitcoin. What do you want to talk about Bitcoin about?
Bitcoin, as I mentioned in the last segment, it solves a lot of problems. When you look at the speed that it goes, you can send money around the world in literally seconds. You can have, you know, the at least 5 confirmations within about a minute or so. So these days of the, you know, 3-day waiting period, and also the fees on Bitcoin are like next to nothing.
Yeah, and they're also next to nothing. Even so, if you're sending an inordinate amount of money, like, you know, it's probably, you know, 5 cents to send $70, and it's probably $0.75 to send $1 million.
Right. You know, you don't have those problems that you get out of the traditional banking system. You have speed, you have low cost.
And I mean, the thing that I really noticed too is the, like, when you move money from PayPal into your bank account, it's literally 3 days before it shows up in your bank account. I had an experience recently of actually testing and utilizing the efficiency and speed of Bitcoin. We went to buy this computer. Derek Slopey and I took some of the money from the Fiend Phone donations, and we bought a computer. And the plan is to make it into a dedicated server for Fiend Phone only, and put it on a radio network so we can have Freedom Fiends co-hosts directly connect in, and you know, so I can take more nights off if I need to and not be burned out. But it's an important thing to be able to do. And it's really neat that we're able to do it, that we actually have a network that's willing to do that, where, we can test this new application still in beta on a commercial radio network. Like nobody else could do that. Like, I don't even think like Comrex could probably do that. So we're going to do that as a test of proof of service of the durability and, commercial application possibilities of, using Fiend Phone. So we bought this bank server. it was literally in a bank. It's a rack mount computer. It was 16 gigs of RAM, no operating system. Like, they wiped the operating system to get rid of any financial data on it. It's a Dell server that's two rack spaces wide, weighs like 50 pounds. And we got a really good deal on it. We got it used for $250, and it was on Amazon. And they had like one available, and all the other ones were like $800 and up. So we wanted to grab this one. Derek and I are talking on the phone. I'm like, okay, I have this much money. I cashed out some Bitcoin that Fiend Phone had and went to gift.com, GYFT.com, and got a gift card for Amazon, which is how you buy things on Amazon with Bitcoin, or one of the ways. And I was like $1.10 short. I'd already put this thing in my cart, and Derek said, you better buy it really quick, man, because buying something on Amazon is not like booking a plane ticket or a hotel room. Like, until you've actually paid for it, like, somebody else can grab it. So it's in my cart.
And I was, they can, like, pull it out of your cart.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, I had some money in my bank account, but I couldn't move it fast enough to get it in to do this. And I'm like, Derek, send me $2 in Bitcoin right now and we can get this. And he did. And like, it was like a minute and a half or 2 minutes before I saw it, and I was able to get it and buy it and do it like right then. You know, I mean, think about how many times in your life this happens. More when you're really poor, but you know, it also happens when you're kind of poor like me, where literally, like, you know, you're $1.50 short for something. Like, have you ever been, you know, waiting in line, you ring everything up and you're like $1.50 short on $200 worth of groceries? You know, you have. And, you know, you've like been sick and went to pick up the medicine from the pharmacist and been like 80 cents short. And you know, your only option is panhandling the person next to you. And you don't want to do that. Think about the possibility that, like, with Bitcoin, like, someone could send that to you on your cell phone, like, right now, immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is not news to a lot of our listeners on the internet, but it might be news to some people listening on radio. If you don't know what we're talking about, Bitcoin, it's a digital cryptocurrency that pretty much has the power to replace money. Everything people like about gold, and I like gold and I like silver, and people should buy it from Midas Resources. But everything that's true about gold and silver, about its durability and divisibility, although Bitcoin is more divisible, like, it's kind of, picture this, it's kind of like gold you can email. Like, it's, you know, it's currency that has an accepted value and a price around the world at any given time. It goes up and down like gold, but not a whole lot generally in a short period of time. And, you know, it's kind of like gold you can email. That's the easy, that's how I describe it to my 93-year-old dad, and he gets it.
And the best thing about it is the scarcity of it. You don't have to worry about a whole bunch of Bitcoin being printed up.
Yeah.
And so the problem that you have with regular fiat paper currencies from governments is they can print the living daylights out of them and go Weimar Republic, or be like Argentina, who destroys their currency every 10 years, whether they need to or not. Yo, yo.
Doubt.
Freedom Fiends. Mm-hmm. Coming at you live from the Frozen State Project of Detroit, Michigan. Welcome, Sturgis. Welcome, Belfouche. That is fun to say.
It is.
And I am joined by Mr. MWD in the bunker.
Yeah, that's me.
Hopefully no bombing will happen.
No.
So, yeah, Bitcoin.
Problems and solutions. Got some. Want more. Good. Got some, want more, and want a lot more to give to Derek to do programming.
Excellent. Yeah. Hey, one of the other problems that Bitcoin solves is with the blockchain being completely open. You don't have to worry about all the shenanigans that goes on with central banking and everything else. And there will never be an audit the Bitcoin movement or an audit the blockchain movement. Now, a lot of people are really excited because the audit the Fed bill passed the House again.
Really?
Again.
They're still doing that. They're still messing with that, huh? I'll bet Rand Paul is probably pushing for it, huh?
Well, he's in the Senate. I'm not sure exactly how many times it's passed, but it's never actually gone beyond one of the houses, I don't believe. When Dirty Harry was still the Senate majority leader, he would keep squashing it, and it never came up for a vote. So it's one of those, what would you call it? Oh, a moral victory. You know, they say, oh, we got it passed in the House, but he died in the Senate. Okay, so you accomplished nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like when, what was it, Justin Amash had this Restore the Fourth Amendment bill or something like that, and people were bragging about how it only lost by 12 votes, but it still lost. And if the Fourth Amendment is ignored, then I don't know. What do you think is going to happen with the Restore the Fourth Amendment? Because you put restore in front of it, that's going to have some sort of impact. They're going to say, oh, my God, this is a restoration. We can't keep spying on people endlessly like the lunatics that we are.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. But with this audit the Fed, and there's a lot of people out there that this is going to harm their fragile sensibilities. And I'm saying this from a place of love. It's a little bit tough love, but it needs to be said. If the Fed is as evil as most people suspect that it is, if the shenanigans there are so out of control, let's say that the audit of the Fed bill passes both the House and the Senate. And let's say that, oh, I don't know, the president signs off on it and says, yeah, we're going to audit the Fed. Do you really think that the Fed is going to turn over evidence that shows just what sort of scumbaggery has been going on?
No.
Do you really think that they're going to incriminate themselves?
No.
I mean, there was a limited audit of the Fed that came from the Dodd-Frank reform bill a number of years ago, and it pointed out some nasty stuff. And you can bet if they give up the information on some nasty stuff, they're definitely holding back on the really nasty stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's say that this bill passes. You know that the Fed is going to obstruct it because they have to keep their thiefdom going on, their little monopoly of printing monopoly money. Now, let's take a look at the politicians. Their positions exist because they can give out all these favors. They can give out all this money, all this corporate welfare, all this individual welfare, the endless welfare warfare state is completely impossible without a central bank, without this endless money supply and borrowing money that doesn't even exist, and then having everybody pay interest on it. So because their positions depend upon the Fed, do you really think they're going to give that up?
No.
Oh.
Nice.
I tried to hit the button on time, but anyway. So, yeah, no, they're not going to give it up. I mean, their very existence depends upon the Federal Reserve. So, in the event that this bill is passed, what's going to come out of it? Let's wake up here.
You know, I got to say, Let me sidetrack for a minute here. Speaking of Dirty Harry, and I know you were talking about Harry Reid, But yeah. This movie, American Sniper, I gotta say, Clint Eastwood directed it. I think if Clint Eastwood had died after the last film I think he directed and starred in, which was amazing, Gran Torino. You ever see Gran Torino?
Yes, I did. I loved it.
Loved it. That movie, that should have been the last thing people remember about him. And I'm not wishing him dead, but if he died or if he just retired, if he just gone and counted his money, made love to beautiful women on a pile of money every night, he would have been such
retired like Sean Connery or Gene Hackman.
Yeah, he would have been such a cool guy, you know, like if that was the last thing you knew from him. And I guess the only thing we can do is he's one of those people that calls himself a libertarian and has been called a libertarian in his life. But I think we really need to, and this is probably more doable than auditing the Fed, I think we need to revoke Clint Eastwood's membership to the Libertarian Club. I don't think it qualifies anymore.
Well, it all depends on what type of libertarian you're talking about. If you're talking about a political libertarian or a philosophical libertarian.
Well, I think, Glenn Beck says he's a libertarian. I say he's not, but he probably faps to the film American Sniper.
Well, he's a political libertarian, which means that he's, you know, slightly less tyrannical than the Republicrats. But
I don't know.
He's still a statist.
Yeah. Definitely.
Now, when you look at a philosophical libertarian who, you know, the whole basis of philosophical libertarianism is the zero aggression principle, you know, you can't, you know, lay around and collect taxes from people because that's theft. You can't, you know, arrest them for having a piece of vegetation because that's violence. So, yeah there's a major difference in there. There really needs to be good explanation of what libertarianism is.
Go ahead.
And if you look at the articles in Salon and Slate, they're absolutely horrible. They, you know, these, you have people that don't know doodly squat about libertarianism writing about how evil libertarianism is.
Well,
and
yeah.
I'm sorry, but congratulations, but you just got an ANCAP to say there ought to be a law. No, these people shouldn't be able to write about libertarianism.
They should be ignored, but they won't be because people are stupid. And, you know, the definition is so broad that when you've got people like Glenn Beck and then on the other hand, Bill Maher, both being called libertarians and calling themselves libertarian, I think it kind of negates it to the point where neither of them are. The word libertarian, it's actually got an interesting derivation. It was created as an antonym to the word authoritarian. The word authoritarian existed first, and the word libertarian is a response to that. A libertarian is the opposite of an authoritarian. An authoritarian is a person who wants to control people to some degree or another in anything or everything they do. And a libertarian is someone who, to some degree or another, does not wish to control and does not wish to be controlled. Now, the thing is, When you take libertarianism to its most consistent conclusion, you basically end up at anarcho-capitalist or voluntarist. And that's kind of a scary thought for a lot of people because, I mean, there's a lot of people who are conservative, who are sick of big government. They're sick of having their small businesses taxed and regulated to death, and they should be. And they think if we just get the right guys in there, government will limit itself. No, that's kind of like saying, you know, if we just get more cobras in this cobra tank, the bad cobras will get eaten, you know, and you're the mouse in the cobra tank.
Yeah. And if you look at the current state of affairs in the U.S. government or even your state government, local government, what you see is a result of waiting for the right people to be elected.
It's also the result of a side effect of that is the things that are paid out in perpetuity that people promise to get elected. Like, let's say there's some politician, at, you know, 25 years ago who got elected with the backing of a labor union. And what he promised that labor union was, you know, in perpetuity, the people in your, you know, mailman union or your police union or nurses union or whatever, you know, you'll get, basically they're giving unfunded mandates. They're saying, you know, everybody will get a 10% increase in their, you know, in their pension for life, and they'll get to retire 2 years earlier. Well, that may be doable the year, you know, the 4 years that the guy's in office, but that's something that's being promised in perpetuity. And enough of those things get promised. And I'm even putting on my minarchist hat here, and I'm putting on my minarchist hat to get back to my anarchist hat. When you promise things in perpetuity and they're piled on and they're piled on and they're never rescinded, they're never taken away, you end up with eventually a 100%, you know, like basically everyone is being taxed 100%. And in a lot of ways, we're kind of close to that right now. Like, you know, income tax is like, you know, 25 to 33%, something like that, depending on how much you make. But you pay a lot more taxes than that, you know, so you pay property tax. And if you're a rent, like I've actually seen like the stupidity of things, like I've actually seen in San Francisco, there was a bill to drive up property taxes to pay for something or other. And a lot of people rent in San Francisco. So the renters were like, yeah, man, stick it to those landlords. And they didn't realize that they'd end up paying it. So if you're a renter, you're still paying, you're still paying property tax if you're a renter. And, you know, when you buy a candy bar at the store, you're not just paying the sales tax. You're paying the sales tax on, you know, the everything of the truck to bring it there. You're paying the property tax on the store. You're paying, you know, the import tax on the chocolate from Central Africa. You're paying tariffs. You're paying all sorts of things. So
basically, you're paying for the bureaucracies to collect those taxes.
Yeah. So basically, without government, everybody would be 8 times richer. Is the maths I've seen on it. And that doesn't necessarily mean everyone would make 8 times what they do now. Everyone might make the same they make now, but it would be worth 8 times as much or have 8 times the buying power. And we were talking about Bitcoin earlier. We got cut off at the break. But one of the things that we didn't point out was that while there is a limited number of Bitcoin that will ever be made, it could actually run the entire economy of the world because every Bitcoin is divisible to 1 million. So you really could. It could replace all the money in the world.
Yeah, and also, I without the ability to create new Bitcoin out of thin air, without the ability to borrow Bitcoin that doesn't exist, you know, you don't have all these bottomless cookie jar promises from politicians because there's no way to provide it. Well, I mean, they might promise it, but they can't provide it.
Well, governments want a monopoly in everything, and they're trying to get a monopoly in money and trying to chip away at the freedom of Bitcoin, but it's pretty hard to do, man. That stuff's slippery in a good way. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
New. Yo.
Now, on radio, you're not supposed to talk about things of prurient interest, but we are going to talk about toilet paper, but in an economic sense, so it's okay. So go ahead, Lou.
Okay, I'm going to preface this with a quote from one of the founding lawyer types. It's from Daniel Webster. There are men in all ages who mean to govern well, but they mean to govern. They promise to be good masters, but they mean to be masters. And what this comes down to is the central planning of, you know, both the monetary policy, but also every state of the economy that exists. And Venezuela is going through a little something right now, and they've been going through this for quite a few years. Hugo Chavez was quite the commie, and Maduro, who has taken his place after Chavez's death, has been no better. Well, anyway, an entire cottage industry of standing in line all day for basic essentials now exists in Venezuela because of destructive government policies. Man. Venezuela's government is now on the brink of defaulting on its financial obligations. Hey, there's that bottomless cookie jar again. Just as it has already defaulted on its obligations to its citizens, it's a sad example of what governments do when they go bankrupt. Almost invariably, they manipulate the currency and print money. Can't do that with Bitcoin. This eventually causes inflation to get out of hand and prices to soar. And they try to control it by imposing price controls.
You know where this often happens is where a country is basically about to fail, and the people in charge intentionally manipulate the currency so they can steal a bunch of it without being noticed.
Yeah, well, they loot the treasury on their way out the door. And because it becomes unprofitable for businesses to produce at artificially low prices, shortages ensue. Down in, and we covered this, I don't know, maybe about a month or so ago, down in Venezuela, they have shortages on everything, and even basic staples like toilet paper. There was a plan to import millions and millions of rolls of toilet paper, and doing the math on it, it came down to 2 rolls per person. So, yeah, don't use it all in one place. I know, bad joke, but you know, this is what happens when a government destroys a currency, and governments always destroy currencies. That's what they do. They can't survive without debasing a currency. There's absolutely no way that any government could survive on a gold standard. If you look at what Rome did, you know, they started debasing their currency by not having the real metals in there, and you know, putting in like tin and other junk.
Wait, did you say a government cannot survive on a gold standard?
Right.
Explain.
Or let me rephrase. The modern government as we know it cannot.
Will not. Yeah. A government could.
Well, cannot either.
A government probably could, although, I don't know, when you mix the word
government
really,
that's really theoretical. Yeah, I guess if you could get a government that stayed limited in scope and didn't try to be the mommy and daddy and protect everybody and didn't try to go to war to plunder and pillage resources in neighboring countries or on the other side of the world, yeah, I guess that could happen. But, yeah, that's not what governments do. No, and governments exist to plunder and pillage.
Yeah, I think that a government on a gold standard is even more dangerous than a government on a fiat currency standard because it gives them something actually valuable and portable to loot on the way out the door.
Yeah, and it also provides an incentive for them to do more looting so that they can, you know, keep the extravagance going.
Yeah, because if they debase the currency enough, you know, it doesn't matter how many million Giltren they have when they go out the door. It's not going to be worth anything in Monaco.
Yeah.
The gold is.
If Venezuela has shortages in toilet paper, and what we talked about was the bare shelves in the grocery stores, what do you think is going on down there? What do you think that the average person is doing to just subsist? Because the money's worthless, and there's nothing to buy with that worthless money.
Yeah. The United States has had a couple periods like that. One was the Great Depression, although it wasn't so much of it was a lack too, because people didn't have money to buy anything because everything was debased so much, but also a lot of things quit being manufactured because no one could buy them. And during World War II, my parents actually were definitely, you know, were alive and adults in World War II, and they've told me when I was younger about rationing. I didn't get the eat your vegetables, there's kids starving in Korea. I got the eat your vegetables, we didn't have vegetables during the war. That kind of blew my mind as a kid. All right, we'll be back after this trip to the free and limited market.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening.
Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
So, Lou.
Yo.
Tell me what time it is. What's up? What's new?
It is time for everybody to get a clue and quit putting faith in government.
Yeah. Yeah, and segueing out of the last segment about Venezuela.
One of the key words that they mentioned was price controls, and I'm a little bit young to remember the price controls of the Nixon era.
I remember them. I remember my parents complaining about them, actually.
Yeah. Well, you also had the price controls during World War II, which your parents complained about also, and it brought about a great many shortages. And one of the other interventions during World War II, or the Great Depression, rather, was something called the Agricultural Adjustment Act. And what this did was it required farmers to slaughter 6 million pigs to keep the price of pork up for the farmers, because the Keynesians in government believed that the farmers were not making enough money off of pork sales. So they decided that they would lower the supply with maintaining the same demand, and therefore prices would go up in a time when people are going hungry and don't have a whole lot of money. And they also destroyed, you know, just millions of acres of agriculture, cotton crops, and you name it. Well, anyway, they eventually figured out that people didn't like all these resources being destroyed. And that's when they started paying the farmers not to produce.
You know what else came out of that, too, was government cheese.
Yeah. Yeah. But by paying the farmers not to produce these things, that led to massive unemployment of farmhands.
When did that happen? When did the subsidy start?
I believe the Agricultural Adjustment Act was in 1936.
You know what I remember seeing on TV that kind of blew my mind when I was a kid, other than the Vietnam War, was farmers dumping milk. And I don't know why they were doing it. It's just an image that's burned in my head from being like six or seven, and watching the news and seeing farmers with those, you know, they used to have milk in those, I don't know, like 20-gallon stainless steel containers. And they were dumping
them. Was it the Amish and raw milk?
No, these were regular. These were not Amish. These were not Amish. And they were dumping milk. And it was pretty bizarre because, like, my grandmother and grandfather and aunt were dairy farmers. And my dad had been my dad and mother had been dairy farmers before they moved to the little town I grew up in. And it made no sense to me, man. It was like, because this is around the time my parents were like, yeah, don't ever waste food. We didn't have a lot of things in the war. And I don't know why they were doing it. I don't know if it was a government-mandated price control. I kind of have a feeling that it wasn't. I kind of have a feeling that it was something to do with that, but more like they were on strike. You know, they were like, we're not getting the money we deserve, or we're not getting our subsidies or something, so we're going to waste this milk on camera. Because it was obviously a press conference. You know, they called the cameras there and dumped the milk.
So your mom says, don't waste your food. And then you see it on TV and you say, well, why are they wasting food? Oh, the government's making them.
I don't know. I would ask my parents questions. I do. The answer was often, it's complicated, which is kind of what you say when you're in a really messed up relationship with somebody. Oh, it's complicated. I definitely remember getting that answer when I watched news footage of Richard Nixon saying, I am not a crook, and then resigning. And
because he was a crook.
Yeah. And, he was doing something, you know, he was spying on about a dozen people. He was basically doing something that the government admits they do all day, every day to everyone now.
Well, it's not illegal when the president does it.
Yeah. And it's even less not illegal. It's even less not illegal or legal when a secret government shadow agency does it. I don't even think it's the NSA that does it. I think the NSA is like the front group for whatever does it.
It's probably the Department of Light Bulbs, Toilets, and Shower Spigots.
And violins or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But something else about price controls, you'll see this a lot in disaster situations. Like with Hurricane Sandy, there were massive shortages of fuel and food and things like that. And, of course, the politicians, in their effort to help people out, said there will be no price gouging, which means that prices cannot adjust to show the shortages and the increase in demand.
Yeah.
And the decrease in supply. And what was happening was people were filling up gas cans and bringing them up from a couple states away and, you know, selling them to people. By eliminating this possibility of somebody profiteering by bringing something that's very needed into an area, they forced people to go without. Now, they did have gasoline in the gas stations, and people were rationed on how much they could purchase at a time. But, yeah, that's central economic planning.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that people look at libertarians and say that we're kind of ugly and selfish because we generally – well, I mean, if someone is economically consistent and in favor of liberty, you cannot be against that kind of price control. I don't necessarily celebrate it as that's the free market at work. It is the free market at work, but it's sort of a little tiny – kind of a little bit of an ugly part of the free market, but it definitely should not be regulated. And my answer to it would be that the government is doing something much worse in that kind of situation. Because, okay, for instance, like if the government's bringing in a tiny bit of food and water for people, which, you know, I'm not saying I would turn down if I were starving and, you know, like, yeah, I would take the government water that they brought in. Especially since probably they've, you know, destroyed the ability to really stockpile anything because they put you on a watch list now if you stockpile anything. And, you know, I mean, because, for instance, like I would love to have, you know, a 500-gallon buried, you know, plastic water, you know, basically get like a big sewage plastic container and bury it in my yard and use it for water, for storing water. But if I did that, they would probably take my house. You know, I couldn't get a permit to do that in town. So, yeah, you take what the government brings if they bring it, if that's all there is. But the amount of money they're spending to bring in that gallon of water is probably 12 times what the inflated price of the guy coming in from the next state selling it is charging. You know, they're charging everyone.
Well, to go back to what you said about is kind of an ugly side. No, not really. It's a realistic side because you have to move
drive
stuff
from another state. I know.
Yeah, you have to move resources from a long ways away and get them in there.
I guess the ugly side of it is kind of like when the local merchant does that, but there's probably a reason for that too. I'm not against it. I just don't celebrate
There's actually a social value to price gouging, and it's real simple. If the gasoline – or not gasoline – if the bottled water stays at $1 a gallon and there's 20 gallons on the shelf, I can go in there with a $20 bill and buy it all up. But when you bump it up to $5 a gallon, you know, maybe I can't do that. So that kind of spreads it out to more people.
So you're saying it's kind of the market doing redistribution of resources, reallocation. I mean, that's what markets do.
Well, it's not redistribution. It's putting it to it. It makes it so that one person or a couple people can't hoard it all.
I guess I'm not arguing against it. I'm just saying that's not what I want on the T-shirt to spread libertarianism. You know?
Yeah. Well, the real utilitarian argument for this is, would you rather people pay a little bit more and have something, or would you rather them pay a little bit less and have nothing?
Yeah, I know.
And I mean, that is the biggest thing. So all these people that celebrate, you know, price gouging laws, you know, what they're actually celebrating is shortages because the laws of economics are inflexible.
Yeah, they really are. And a lot of people don't understand economics at all. And a child can understand economics correctly. It's not that complicated. As Davy Barker says, it's kind of like chess. The rules are simple, but the game can be complicated. And the game can be complicated because it involves people and their decisions, and it can never be totally predicted. It can never be centrally planned. And it involves massive scales of numbers of people.
Yeah. And if you do try to centrally plan it, you get Venezuela.
Or Detroit. Wouldn't it be nice on the way to Venezuela.
Yeah. wouldn't it be nice if somebody had tried out, you know, the socialist economic system? I don't know, maybe like the Soviet Union, East Germany, North Korea, but if China, you just get Cuba.
But if you just get the right central planners in there, yeah, people don't learn.
Vote
from,
harder.
You know, the thing is, too, a wise person once told me, it was actually Steve Albini when we interviewed him for the DIY or Die movie DVD extras. We interviewed him after the movie. He said something in effect of, you know, like we asked him, like, what advice do you have for young musicians starting out? And he said something like, learn from other people's mistakes so you don't have to make the mistakes yourself. If you have the choice of being horribly burned in a fire or finding out someone else was horribly burned in a fire and then not doing what they did, you're a lot better off if you don't have to be horribly burned in a fire. And I would say that a lot of current, all governments around the world are not learning from other governments being horribly burned in their own fire throughout history.
Well, actually, they're like the person who has just started smoking that says, I can quit at any time, or, oh, that'll never happen to me.
Yeah.
So they think that they can, you know, try socialism and all these different statist policies, and that it's not going to have any repercussions on them because, well, I'm different.
Well, that's kind of weird because, you know, usually that kind of thought, like, oh, I'll never get arrested, I'll never get cancer, you know, that kind of like indestructible thinking is generally the ballywick of young people. I mean, that's kind of something young people believe, and that's probably why the free market of nature provides so many of them in a given species, you know, because they all think they're indestructible, and they all do things as if they're indestructible, like skateboard and snowboard and, you know, walk down streets with no self-defense and, drink and do a lot of drugs and have a lot of unprotected sex with strangers. You know, they do these things that any one of them could kill them, and young people tend to do all of them. And I did all of them. The thing is, the reason the human race continues is because there are a lot of young, or any species, is there are a lot of young, nature allows for some breakage, some of them die, and they're also very durable. You know, like young people can fall down skateboarding and not break anything, and you know, when you're over 30, it doesn't work as easily. But by the time people are 30, hopefully they've gotten a little bit of wisdom. But politicians are generally old, man. You'd think they would have learned by now. But I think it's that people who go into politics have the minds of children, or the outlook of children, of everything can be given away and everyone can still have everything.
They think government has magic powers.
Yes.
They figured out the pro wrestling was
to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends. The show that advocates for government so small, it's still on a MySpace, and its only friend is Tom. Its only friend is Tom. All right, Lou. Lou liked that.
Yeah. What you got, man? Hey, we're just a couple of old codgers here complaining about the gummy mint.
Get off my lawn, government.
You know when I got old? I can't tell you the specific time, but I could tell you the specific event. You know when you're in like the grocery store parking lot in the wintertime and you got the big old piles of snow, you know, like in between the cars or pushed off to the side and stuff like that. I knew that I was getting old when I started walking around those big giant piles instead of climbing that mountain like the king that I was.
Yeah. I'm not old yet because I believe you get old when you stop being teachable, when you stop being able to change your major life ideas. I actually heard I also still hate some music, which I think means I'm not old, because I heard Patton Oswalt talking in a comedy bit today about that. He's like talking about how he knows he's old. And one of the things was that He's like, when I was 25, I hated some music. I was like, man, you know what's wrong with it? Like, had really strong opinions against music. And it's kind of funny because I generally think of like old people as really hating the music of young people, but he's kind of got
too loud.
He's kind of got a point too, though. Like, you know, if you're not forced to listen to it, like, you know, if you just come across it, you know, going through a store or something, like he said, you're old when you're just like, yeah, it's just music. I don't know. I don't really have strong moral opinions about this band or that band, but I kind of still do. Although I've got kind of a very old guy opinion of it, which is that I think there hasn't been much really good music to come out in the past 15 years, which is really the definition of old, I think. But it's not that I haven't listened to it. I've checked out a lot of stuff, and I just don't think there's a lot of good stuff coming out anymore. There probably is, but it's like everybody can do it now and everybody can share it. So the signal to noise ratio is higher, and it's probably harder to find the good stuff.
Well, I'm going to agree with you, and it's not because I'm a crotchety old coot like you, because I'm not, but I grew up in the 70s and 80s, so if you look at like, I grew up on like the hair metal bands and in the regular heavy metal bands of the 80s, you know, hair metal being Dokken, Poison, Bon Jovi, things like that. And then, the real metal, it wasn't so much metal. I guess maybe it was considered metal in the 70s, but you know, the Led Zeppelins, the Thin Lizzy's and things like that. The modern music these days, you don't have guitar solos anymore. The singers can't sing. You take somebody like a Jeff Tate from Queensryche. I mean, he can go across, you know, the entire spectrum with his voice. I mean, he can hit all the notes, and pretty much all the singers and even the hair metal bands were good singers. And the guitar players could play the guitar and they could riff and they could do their solos. And yeah, they're very good. And you just don't see that anymore. I mean, everything now is just, you know, like three chords, you know, repeat yourself a couple times and go get the groupies.
I don't know. I think that sounded like an old man rant, and I have contrary opinions to it, but I kind of like
disprove
it. I kind of like what Patton Oswalt said too. He was like, man, he's like, when he was 25, he was like, man, these bands, they're not really into music. Like Nickelback, man, they just make that music for money and chicks, man. And he's like, I wish me now could talk to me then. I would say, you know what most people do in this world for money and sex? Horrible things. They murder. They cut off people's arms. They blow up cities. At some point in the singer in Nickelback's life, he said, you know, maybe I don't want to kill massive amounts of people. Maybe I'll just sing. And he's like, when you think about it, it's kind of actually a very noble decision.
Hey, Nickelback gets a lot of heat. I mean, I'm not a super fan of them. You know, I don't go looking for their stuff on the radio, but I also don't turn the channel automatically when I hear them. Why are they getting such a bad rap?
They're a band people love to hate. I don't know. I've heard them. They just kind of sound like second or third rate Nirvana to me. It didn't do it for me, but it certainly didn't make me angry.
I wonder if it's a Beavis and Butthead effect. You know, Winger was pretty popular until Beavis and Butthead came out.
I was barely aware of hair metal, man. I was like deeply entrenched in punk rock. And I was really happy when Nirvana came along and killed all the hair metal bands off like Weed Killer.
Like Roundup.
Roundup for hair metal. Brought to you by major corporations. All right. We'll be back Saturday, and then Lou's going to come on Sunday with Ben and I talk about Status Anonymous. Worms. Thank you for your service.
It was a pleasure. Yeah, it was a pleasure being had.
It was a had being pleasured.